founders of KFUO were, as we say among ourselves here, three men, two men, really only one man. The real founder was Dr. Richard Kretschmar. He was the pastor of a mayor's church in the city, and he was chairman of the board of control of the seminary. That was the key position that he held with regard to the founding of KFUO. And he treated as a member of the board of control of the seminary to establish a radio station at the seminary. Now, he was assisted nobly in his endeavor by Dr. Walter A. Meyer, who was a member of the faculty at that time, and he was editor of the Waterloo Messenger, that is the official periodical for our young people, and through the columns of the Messenger, used his influence to stir up interest among the young people in the church in general for radio. And another man who helped Dr. Fechter very much was Dr. Fitzer, who was the dean of the seminary at that time, and had great influence with the students. So those three men, Dr. Kretschmar, Dr. Fitz, and Dr. Meyer, they were the ones that served as the vanguard for the founding of the station. And the station was founded then on December 14, 1924, at the old seminary in South Jefferson Avenue, up in the attic. Everything was in a very primitive condition as we look at it now after 35 years, although the station which was put on the air at that time was the last word, of course, see. And Dr. Fitz and Dr. Meyer then, they constituted the so-called operating committee. There was no one else except that they had to employ a part-time radio operator. But Dr. Fitz and Dr. Meyer, they carried the brunt of the work, the fan mail, the announcing, the programming, and the support, in addition to all the work they had to do at the seminary. Then that work got to be too much for them, and they looked around for someone whom they could call to head the station. And then I got into the picture the following year, on October 11th, 1925. In other words, in October of this year, I'll be around here for 35 long years. Well, we had only two programs a week when we started. Now, just imagine, two programs a week when we started. And then the number of programs was increased as we went along. And as the time came then to move the seminary to the new site here, that was done in May 1926. And the station remained behind at the old seminary because no provisions were made in the construction of the new seminary to house station KFUO. We were left behind, see. So we were put on our own to find some way of getting out here with the new seminary. And the Lutheran Layman's League, then, the layman's organization of our church, they appropriated, pardon me, $50,000 for a new station. And that's how the station moved from the old seminary to the new seminary, by a $50,000 grant of the Lutheran Layman's League. And we built this building here, not as it stands today, but only a part of it. But we had a brand new building to house KFUO, and we installed a new 1,000-watt transmitter, sold our old 500-watt transmitter, built new towers and so forth. In other words, we had a brand new plan from A to Z, and that was dedicated then in May 1927, a year after the seminary had been dedicated here. And we increased our programming and tried to improve our programming as we went along, which necessitated, of course, an increase in personnel. And then KFD, with whom we were sharing time from the beginning, that's the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, a powerful newspaper, saw the financial and commercial possibilities of radio, and wanted to have full time. And we were willing to cooperate with them up to a certain point, making concessions to them, but they were satisfied with nothing but to have full time on the frequency which we had been sharing with them, which was a very good frequency. Good morning. Good morning. KFC's ambition to get full-time finally resulted in an application on their part with the Federal Communication Commission to have KFUO deleted. You know what deleted means. That meant life or death for KFUO. And we had to sound the trumpet and declare war, and we really went to war with it, and we spoke in fact, legally, financially, and every other way. And you could write a book on that. Well, the outcome of that was that the commission Judd Caulfield's service, which they examined very carefully by means of witnesses at Washington, was meritorious. And that's the word that they expressly used, it's meritorious service, and we were entitled to a place on the air and would not be deleted. So it was called a draw, status play. Of course, KSU was not satisfied with that decision, and they continued to try to get full time, and finally there was a happy solution found. Different frequencies for KSU on which we would have more time than we ever had before. And that's the frequency that we have now, and KSC could have full time on the frequency which they had from the very beginning, 550 kilocycles. So what the fight with KSC amounted to for us was that we got a very good frequency in exchange for the one that we had. And on that frequency, we got permission to increase the power from 1,000 to 5,000 watts, and we received permission to broadcast full time during the day. And up to that time, we were just broadcasting fragments of time. And we, of course, thanked the Lord, and we were elated over the outcome of such a hearing. And that, of course, meant a tremendous development program for KSO, because we weren't equipped in any way, shape, or form, financially or personnel-wise, to take care of such a grant. And we were faced with the financial problem, whether we could make this thing a go. And fearing that we would not be able to maintain our increased facilities on a gift basis by voluntary contribution, we actually applied with the government to commercialize the station. And the government gave us the grant on that basis that we would commercialize. And we said among ourselves, now we've got this grant, and can we make it a go or not financially? And they said, well, we have all so long, and let's do one thing, try again, ask the Lord to bless us, and tell the people what our situation is. And we really made a noise among our friends in Scott Synod as what had happened, what we were facing, what we should do. And by the grace of God, the people came forward and they contributed so that we were able to finance these increased facilities, and our budget went right up like a skyrocket in the sky. But the people were with us, and we didn't have to commercialize, and I think it was wise that we didn't. And we had enlarged this building here, and we had to employ and increase personnel. Well, it was a $100,000 program that we embarked upon. A $100,000 program, the Senate loaned us the money, and of course the time we were able to pay it back in shorter time than they had demanded it for us. And we were able to maintain the station through the current expenses. So there was an expansion program of $100,000, and our expenses went up maybe from $9,000 to $60,000. Now the expense per year is approximately $160,000 a year. Well, then FM came along, and we felt that we should go into FM, and the government then thus FM frequency and support, and FM gave us full nighttime operation. On our AM frequency, we had daylight operation up to a certain point in the evening, but not full nighttime operation. So we used FM and went on full nighttime operation. In other words, when AM had signed off, our FM, which had also been on simultaneously with AM, continued then till about midnight. So that meant another forward movement. And the Lord blessed our efforts to raise the money and keep the interest of the people high for that. And this part of the building here to the west is the last expansion program as far as building is concerned that we carried out. I think that was done in October 1948. And we carried out a $300,000 expansion program at that time. And we also planned to go into television. That was an ill-fated problem, a project, I guess. We had applied for an ultra-high frequency, and the government gave us an ultra-high frequency, but by the time the government gave it to us, we realized that to commercialize on an ultra-high frequency, which would mean also the commercialization of our radio station, would be a very precarious endeavor. And we surrendered our TV grant to the government, and I think by God's guidance it was wise that we did that. But that, in brief, is the history of KSO, and humanly speaking, it's one of the greatest success stories, I think, in the history of Missouri Synod, apart from the fact that I was in it. You understand that I'm not boasting in myself, but I think any unbiased person who would follow the history of KFUO from its very beginning, which is just very, very primitive, to what we have now is to really, you know, say that it's the miracle the Lord has performed here.
Well, Doctor, we certainly appreciate that, and I think we had some questions, possibly, that we would want to direct to you, too. I think, for instance, when I came into St. Louis in 1948, it was in that fall of the year, and I was out here at the dedication of this section of the building. The service was held over in the chapel, but I sat right at about where I am seated now, because it was so crowded over there. We had a huge throng of people on the seminary campus at that time for the dedication of this building. KFUO has grown in these 12 years that I've been in St. Louis, so much so that it's unbelievable to me. Fortunately, I was asked to serve on the radio committee, which at that time was under the jurisdiction of the seminary, isn't that right?
Okay.
I wonder if you'd give us just a little bit of that, how KFUO was operated, who was responsible for it, for the church.
Well, the station being located on the seminary was made, the Board of Control was made responsible for the operation of the station, just as it is to the seminary itself. And the Board of Control, the seminary, burdened with the seminary work, they chose a subcommittee, which was called the KFUO Radio Committee. And that radio committee was subject to the Board of Control of the seminary, and the Board of Control of the seminary was subject to the Board of Directors of the Synod. That was the organizational setup.
And then about 1955, I think it was, or at the Houston Convention, the Mass, or was it at the Milwaukee Convention, the Mass Communications Commission was formed. That was at the Houston Convention, with the idea that the seminary Board of Control would no longer control KFUO, but that Synod itself, under its Board of Directors, would. And the Mass Communications Commission then made KFUO its first project, and they came in and used very few of those of us who had served on the committee over a number of years. One man I know had served from its beginning almost, Dr. Schick, you recall, and others, and new ideas were brought in. One was that a person shouldn't stay in a position too long, and so Dr. Hohenstein was relieved of his position as general manager of the station, and they created a new situation or a new position for him in charge of the extension service. Now that is something that Dr. Hohenstein had been very much interested all along, but being responsible for the entire station could not devote his time. Here it was like putting him out to pasture, you might say, and you will forgive me for saying that, but I'm sure some of the people had that in mind, with the idea, here's a little hobby now that he can play with. Well, God has blessed this hobby so much that, to my mind, the extension service of KFUO is one of the finest things that has happened to KFUO or to the church. I wonder if you'd give us a little bit of the history of this extension service now.
Well, the purpose of the extension department is to extend the usefulness of the station beyond the service area, which is served by the transmitter, by making available to the men on the outside pastors and missionaries and chaplains, not only in the United States and Canada, but any part of the world, recorded programs and program component parts and all kinds of other material that they could use at the radio or television for use over local stations. And we have developed a library with which I'd like to make you acquainted while you're here this week.
We want to.
And the circulation of this material is, without meaning to exaggerate, on a global basis, and the recorded program which is used most extensively is the Court of the Prayer program.
And that map there indicates something, perhaps? With
well, yes, that map indicates cities in which one or more persons has made use of one or more of the materials and services that are available from KFUO. There are over 2,000 cities in the United States which we serve through our extension department, and the pictures show some of the men who are in the act of actually using the materials which we have sent them. Court of the Prayer is a two-minute devotion, and the devotions are selected from a devotional booklet by that name, which is published by the publishing house. And we put 70 bosons on one side of a 16-inch transcription set on the other. So there's 14 of just a disc like that, that size, 16-inch. 70 bosons on each side, that's 14 bosons. And there are over 400 stations in the United States and Canada that are using that now. It's being used in number of prisons, a number of hospitals, and the Armed Forces Network uses it. It has 145 transmitters in all parts of the world. Voice of America uses it. And we estimate here among ourselves that perhaps 20 to 25 million people hear that program in the course of a week. And that's only one program that we make available. We have others too.
Mm-hmm. Now we are going to get in more definitely a little later on all of the things that are available from the Extension Service Department. You're going to get a list of the items that you could have a radio station use, that you may even want to use with a project in your own parish. It's not necessary that this go out on the air. KFUO prefers that, but a beginning might be to use it with, say, a men's club or a mission group in the congregation. And you may have that program director in your missions group who says, hey, this is real quality. This can be used on the air. And then they will use it. So I wonder if any of you have a question based on something Dr. Hornstein might have said. Or
I have a question and a remark. The question is, is this the first religious broadcasting station in the country?
Well, we're making investigation now to find out authoritatively whether we are or not. And we haven't completed our investigation study yet. We've gone right to the Federal Communications Commission to mm-hmm. find out from them officially whether we are or not. I think we are.
The Presbyterians have one in Richmond, which they, I forget how old it is, but it's the oldest in the state of Virginia.
All right. Uh-huh.
WRVA is 32 years old. It's the oldest commercial station, so it must be right close to the KFUO then.
Atlanta has one operated by the Baptists. There's one down in Fort Worth, Texas, operated by the Baptists. The Lutherans in Minnesota have St. Olaf up at...
May I interrupt? Yeah. I wrote to them and asked them two questions. Are you listed by FCC as a educational or as a religious station? And I surmise that it was education, that's what they answered.
WCAL.
So they're not in our category.
I see.
And then I asked them for the date, too, and they, I don't remember the date, but I know they're not as old as we are.
And WMBI in Chicago, Moody Bible Institute,
they're not as old. No.
Mm-hmm. That perhaps is one of the best known of the religious broadcasting mm-hmm. stations, WMBI out of Chicago.
Well, that's why I want to pay such a compliment to these three men whom I mentioned before, Kretschmar, Fitz, and Meyer, that they were so alert at that time.
Mm-hmm.
They were so alert at that time. It was really the Lord's finger. And this may be said, too, that when Dr. Kretschmar presented the idea of the border control, they didn't fall for it right away. He met opposition there. He had a huge salesmanship. And finally, however, the Lord convinced all of them that things should be done.
How large is the staff today?
I would say between.
What type of personnel do you have here at the station?
Well, as for departments, Pastor Grotian, he's the religious supervisor.
Pastor Grotian will be down with
and,
us at 11 o'clock.
Mr. Steinmeier, he's our office manager. And Mr. Russell, who's our general manager. And Mr. Eichler, who's our production manager. And then Walter Silverman, who's our chief engineer, those five people. And then they have help and staff underneath them, like a certain number of engineers and operators, and secretary, and people in the music department.
Now, as we walk through the station today, we're going to see a pretty large staff on duty. I wonder if you can tell us why you have more today, just today, than you would have normally. I'm thinking of these women who are here stuffing envelopes.
We make use of volunteer help when we have what we call a mailing. These mailings are sending consists of sending of literature to people who are on our mailing list. And the purpose of the mailing is to arouse their interest in KFUO, and if possible also to get a donation from them, because the station, as you know, is financed by voluntary contributions. We don't have any commercial programs. We're not even on the budget of our denomination.
How much do you get from our Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod each year?
Get nothing from it.
Get nothing. And still owned and operated. Pastor Knox?
My home as a youth was out in the fringe of the Missouri Synod, namely out in the state of Washington. We used to hear from time to time about the DX programs, which of course were broadcast in early morning hours. When did they begin and when did they discontinue? Seems to me when I was still here at the seminary, they were conducted from time to time, but since then I haven't heard of them.
Well, I couldn't tell you just when they were discontinued, but they were on the air for quite a number of years, and the purpose of the program was to reach people whom we couldn't reach otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason we went on at night is the other station, who during the day causes interference, has signed off, and we had the field to ourselves, and we covered the whole country from one end of the country to the other. And on this frequency here, we, for the purpose of a DX program, had to get permission from KOA at Denver, Colorado. They are the dominant station on this particular frequency, the 50,000 watts, and they have full-time operation. And of course, they would always give us permission. They would be glad to do that until a certain time. Now, what year that was, something else, I don't know. They went on a 24-hour basis, which, like KMOX in St. Louis, was on a 24-hour basis. And we couldn't get permission from them to use even 2 hours at night to broadcast. And for that reason, we just continued.
Wouldn't you say, though, that in view of the extension service department, that is really unnecessary now, that the programs can be received directly from local stations rather than from KSUO?
Oh, yes, sure. Sure. But I do believe that if KOA would not have gone on a full-time 24-hour basis, we would have, at least for a number of years, have continued those programs because they were very popular with the people.
Yeah. Like Pastor Knox, I perhaps am revealing that I'm in the mid-40s, but Fried Eisman built a radio set that had three knobs, and there was a speaker up on top, and that was our first radio set at home. And I recall the Lutheran Witness, the only thing that I read in the Lutheran Witness as a young teenager was when KFUO had its DX program. Dad always gave me permission to stay up till 2 o'clock in the morning in order to tune that in, and that was quite a thrill to get directly from our own Lutheran radio station here at Concordia Seminary, the radio program. I can recall that just 1927, 28, 29, very vividly.
Well, KFUO on the air, we had fans there from all over the country. I remember that so well, because there were so few stations on the air.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't have that interference and that opposition.
May we ask what kind of religious programming has come down through the years as a successful type of program? What is a program, say, that's been on for a long time? What type of programs have you had that have gone off the air?
Well, perhaps Pastor Grossman could answer that even better than I could, because changes have been made even at KFUO here since the last 5 years. But we have maintained here at KFUO all these 35 years the devotional program. We have abbreviated them to a certain to a great extent. But they've held their own. We have the morning meditation, which is a devotion program, the sermonette, and we have the sermonette from the student chapel, and we have the sermonette from the Lutheran High School. We have the sermonette of the noonday program, and also in the afternoon.
One of the things that we're going to spend time this afternoon talking about is the broadcasting and telecasting of church services. And with Pastor Knox being here, I'm sure that he is going to appreciate, too, a reaction from all of us, and he can give us his own reaction, because Pilgrim Church, of which he is pastor, I guess you're a senior pastor there, right, Pastor Knox?
Well, I'm not senior at age, but
no. Well, Pastor Emeritus, Pastor Derfler, is still, I guess, somewhat active, isn't he? Has been broadcasting over KFUO for how many years? It's been many years.
They say since 1929, if I remember.
1929, 31 years, every Sunday morning, and up until a year or two ago, it was two services on a Sunday morning.
Mm-hmm.
So We have something here that it has just grown with radio and with this particular station, a church service every Sunday morning. And so we're going to have some questions to ask of Pastor Noss and also hear what other places are doing. Now, I don't know if in Richmond you're broadcasting any church services yet or not.
Yes, but not on a regular basis.
Not on a regular basis.
1 month a year.
And I know that Mr. Graysmill, as your position is Executive Secretary of the Cleveland...
Cleveland Federation of Lutheran Churches.
Okay. So, he, in his particular position, has the coattails of many pastors and congregations in that greater Cleveland area, and, of course, is real interested in recognizing the potential of broadcasting and news broadcasting. And so we hope that you're going to be able to get things from this, too. Are there any other questions some of you have for Dr. Hohenstein?
Okay, this would be well to say, too, we are now, as Mickey was once, on the fringe of the Missouri Synod out of Virginia. And, of course, KFUO doesn't mean to our people or to the pastors what it means, obviously, to you people here who can hear it every day. As I was driving in yesterday, I picked it up over here in Illinois and was able to hear some good music and so on. But we can't do that. So this KFUO has become to mean something now to the extension service. And I think really it's the station itself is a local entity. Your extension service really becomes a church-wide service that is a lot more effective perhaps than even being. Although we haven't been able to use it as much as we like. We feel like a gold mine, like one of the reasons I'm here, to learn how to use it.
Good. Mr. Craigwell?
Are there any other areas in our Lutheran church where an attempt has been made at any time during the past 35 years to establish another radio station, or have there been discussions held in any area recently about establishing another Lutheran-owned and operated station, or not?
Dr. Hohenstein?
We called earnestly to discuss the matter, not and over a period of years. I mean, they gave it not just casual consideration, but very thorough consideration, and finally resolved not to go into the deal. That's the only Lutheran center of importance that I can think of. There may have been other endeavors here or there, but they didn't assume such proportion as they wanted to call them. Maybe you know someone.
No, I don't. I have a question, though.
Uh-huh.
With the Roman Catholic Church having such power and interested so much in extending their cause, why is it that we don't hear of Roman Catholic stations? I assume there must be some, but I don't know of any. I just thought that they would certainly make very good use of this means of communication.
Well, what the philosophy is, really, I don't know, but you know that WW, which belongs to St. Louis University, they sold that station. They went out of business altogether.
Mm-hmm.
So I was never able to find out just why they did. And their philosophy may be something like ours. Instead of spending a whole lot of money on individual stations here and there, have an extension department that produce programs, which they do.
That's right.
On an extensive station, on an extensive basis throughout the whole United States, and make them available to the local station.
I happened to be attending St. Louis University, where I did most of my speech work, when they sold WEW. We used WEW for our practice work. At the same time, Professor Patterson, who was in charge of the radio station, developed his own in-school radio station, so that those of us who were in the program could get our experience on just a local radio station that was meant only for the school itself. It was a commercial station, and because of that, and because of the high overhead of a station, they had to sell much of the time they really wanted to use themselves. You see, they did not, as such as we do, ask people for donations. And apparently the powers that be didn't decide to just throw in $100,000 a year for the support of the station. And so that was the reason it was sold. But like Dr. Hohenstein says, they have so many orders who have their own money and who have their own types of programs, Sacred Heart, for example, and they will spend all of their money on that particular program and then give it out to the various parishes or maybe even directly to the radio station and ask them to use it. The Baptists are the people next to the Lutherans who have gone into radio and TV as extensively for any religious denomination. They have a very fine center in Atlanta, Georgia, and in Fort Worth, Texas. And they have a program very similar to This Is the Life. They call it This Is the Answer. And then they also have quite a number of sort of programs that they send to deal directly with radio stations rather than to congregations. They're people, they feel that our way of doing it is better, but they say we can't get the cooperation of the individual out in the faraway place. In other words, the fellow out in Washington associated with the radio station in Atlanta, what does he know about it? So the station itself then deals with radio stations rather than with congregations. We will, I think, do both. Isn't that right, Dr. Hornstein? If a radio station writes in, why, we will work with them. Or if the congregation writes in, we like to associate the program with the congregation. And that's the advantage now that you would have, say, in Cleveland, using some of these programs here. KFUO has no objection at all that you would say that this program is sponsored by the Greater Lutheran Cleveland Federation.
We deal directly with the station itself if there is no local congregation. But if there's a local congregation, we always contact the local pastor first. And of course, they never meet any opposition there when they tell them that the station manager across the street and he wants to use our program.
One of the things that we're interested in is that our pastors will be the go-between men at these radio stations. It's much easier to work through a personality than through letters, you know that. And by acquainting our Lutheran pastors with the potential of radio and TV, and that's what we're attempting to do here at the seminary through these courses that have been offered in recent years, more and more of our men are using these facilities. I think it might be interesting to tell how Dr. Hohenstein and I talked, well, when I was on the board yet, about a so-called marriage of KFUO and the seminary. Remember that brochure that you built up with the idea that the seminary should use KFUO more than it was doing at the time? And then 6 years ago, when I was called to the seminary, and I asked if I could not teach a course here at KFUO and radio television, well, it would be on what was called a cultural hour basis. In other words, free will time, free time. We did that. And that first year, we had 35 students down here during the noon hour. And we lectured to them once a week for about 12 weeks and gave them opportunities to work with actual broadcasts. Since then, it has become a standard course, an elective course that is offered through our practical department, a three-hour credit course, and the students can get credit for it. We've had in recent years a number of requests from pastors who visit campus and say, why can't you offer something like this? And we tell them what we're doing here in the summertime. And so that was one of the reasons that, all right, this summer we're going to do that. I think some of us may be a bit disappointed that we don't have a huge crowd of 35. I was hoping that we wouldn't have more than 12, because it's hard to work with more than 12 in a group. And even with three, I'm sure that, as Mr. Pastor Seavers said earlier this morning, we're just going to be the ones who will benefit by it, because, as I've said, this program that I've arranged is not necessarily going to be followed, because we want to tailor what we do this week to meet your needs. And so this morning it'll be sort of an orientation. This afternoon we will get started on the broadcasting of services, but then as we continue to talk back and forth and exchange ideas, we will pick up things that you want to do. May I spend just a few minutes time in going over what some of the things that I had planned. You may in turn want to mark something down and say, yes, this is something I'd like to hear. We are going to hear from Pastor Grotier at 11 o'clock this morning on religious broadcasting at KFUO, and then after he has talked to us for a while, we're going to make a tour through the station, and we can see what facilities there are here for your use at KFUO. This afternoon, we want to spend the time in discussing broadcasting the worship service. I have continuity of the programs from First Lutheran Church in Omaha, Nebraska, who has its own network of six stations in the Nebraska-Iowa area. And they broadcast every Sunday morning. And we're going to, we have this continuity, and we can play parts of the tapes to show you what they do. For instance, one of the things is they have an announcer in the background who explains what is being done or who gives a bit of the history of the hymn. And we want to find out, is this good? Is this worshipful? Is it meaningful? Who is the audience we want to reach? And so on. So then that evaluation. Tomorrow morning, we want to get started on thinking, or if this is your interest, thinking what you yourself can do in front of the microphone. Microphone presence, the speaking voice. What is it that we need to know that an announcer has picked up either from schoolwork or through experience that will help make us become better broadcasters? Effective use of tape recorders. I have, for your use here, four new tape recorders the speech department has just purchased. And by the way, our speech department, I think, at the seminary is the most blessed of all of the departments, because when I don't even have to hint for money, and I get it, this past year, Dr. Walbrecht of the Board for Higher Education said, do you need any new equipment? And I said, well, I can always use equipment. I'll write out a requisition of what you want. And where are you getting the money? Oh, that doesn't make any difference. You get what you need. So I put in a requisition for a new console that will give me opportunity to tape record from any of the classrooms in Graduate Hall and also to play back. It's being built at the present time. Should be finished within a few weeks now for $600. Put in a request for two new heavy-duty tape recorders such as this one. I think I estimated the cost at $300. And two portable tape recorders, particularly for the faculty's use. Now, I have nine other tape recorders in the speech office, but these weigh only 18 pounds, and I wanted something that only faculty members would use, and they're going to be your use, so you have the status of a faculty member this week, so that they can make greater use of the tapes that we have. We have a library of about 150 different tapes over in the speech office at the present time. Well, I shopped around, and I was able to get this machine and another one like it for $186.50 instead of $300. I was able to get that one for $125.50 instead of $175 that I had estimated. So I was real happy. I thought I'd save the church some money. And about 3 weeks ago, I got a telephone call, and they said, look, you haven't spent all your money. Well, I got all my things, but you didn't spend all your money. You requested $1,550. Well, does that mean I can go ahead and spend the rest of it? Sure. So, boy, my other tape recorders are all in the electronics shop being put in tip-top shape. So asked me what was wrong. I said, I don't know. But just go over it and make sure that it's like new. And I had my microphones repaired, and I've been able to buy equipment that will help me, tools that will help me do a lot of repair work myself over in the office. And so last Friday, I went by Mr. Crato's office, our business manager, and gave him a review of all the money that I had spent, and I had miscounted, and the total I had spent was $1,555. I thought, oh my, what happened? And he stood up and shook my hand. Oh, I'd much rather have you go over $5 than under $5.
You're reporting a dream real
this happened, Dr. Hohenstein. Can you imagine? In our Lutheran church, it happened. And so I was a bit confused. I said, well, really, I shopped around to save money. Well, you don't understand. It says, you see, this money is allocated to the seminary for this particular work. Other colleges request money from the BHG, and so they then assign so much money or allocate so much money to the colleges. Had you only spent $1,200 of your money, that would have meant that $350 would not have been able to have been used at all by other colleges. and they would have really come back at the Board for Higher Education and said, look, why didn't you assign us this money? It was left over. Well, it makes sense. That's the bureaucratic way of running things, I guess. So I say I am more blessed, I think, than any other department. I have estimated about $5,200 worth of equipment, electronic equipment.
Quite a change since we were here at the same time.
Yes, it has. So one of the things then that we would spend tomorrow morning is to teach you or to answer any questions about the use of tape recorders, particularly the ones that you will use here, and then how they can be used in your own studies. I was telling, for instance, Pastor or Mr. Gravesmill, a machine like this, which is a Japanese model of the Ampex, a professional model machine that KFUO uses as a portable, and this is just as good as the Ampex, can be purchased, as I said, for $186.50. And by the way, one of the reasons you can get these cheaper is that today, through the planned obsolescence of electronic people, they have gone into first dual channel stereo and now to four channel stereo. And so what we call or term as monaural tape recorders, which is certainly only all that's necessary for speech, we can get those quite reasonable. You get the same machine in four channel stereo, you'd pay maybe $400 for it, and it only has a couple more tubes and another little amplifier in it. But that's what the demand is, you see. But now if he would have a machine like this in his office there in Cleveland, a local man from Cleveland comes back after spending 3 years, 5 years in a foreign mission field, there's no reason at all why he couldn't, right there in the office, closing the door, sit down, such as we're doing right here, talk about the situation, make up a little continuity. There's human interest there. A local man has been gone. He comes back. He has a story to tell. Edit it. We'll show you how to edit these tapes by splicing it, and radio stations don't mind at all if they're spliced, even though when you buy, I'll give you each a tape. It says splice free on the tape. That doesn't mean a thing because radio stations are constantly splicing their tapes to take out things and to add things and so on. Why, that can be taken to a radio station. Here's a program. And the local station is going to say, this I like. This has appeal. And I want something that has appeal because that sells my product. And I have to sell this product in order to stay in business. You see. So we want to give you as much information about the use of tape recorders as possible. Interpretive reading on radio. We want to spend a bit of time with that, particularly those of you who find yourself before the microphone. What must be done in order to make that voice interesting? How can I get the fullness as far as resonance is concerned? What about articulation? What about enunciation, pronunciation? How careful must I be? Then program and programming. What kind of programs have you been responsible for? What kind of programs are you interested in? What kind of programs would you like for your church or your area to do? And I think that if necessary, I had talked with Jane Goodman of our Metropolitan Church Federation. She would be very happy to come out here. I hesitate for just a few of us to ask her to come out, and still, you may be interested in having her. And if so, you let me know, and we will spend some time letting. She is perhaps one of the foremost in religious broadcasting for the National Council of Churches, and St. Louis is lucky to have her. Her specialty is primarily television instead of radio, however. Putting program ideas to work, putting program ideas on tape. We're going to spend several hours in listening to, you can handle these records, the records that Dr. Hohenstein has upstairs. Bring them downstairs and play them on the record machine or on the tape recorder and listen to the types of programs that KFUO has available. You're going to be surprised. Have you heard of Journey to Calvary?
I've heard of it.
Boy, a real professional program that radio stations throughout the country has used. It's something that you ought to mark down and say, this is something that our Greater Cleveland Federation should put on next Holy Week. You see. It's a you are there type of program. Get it free of charge. Well, no, not free of charge. You charge now about $3.50 or $4 for these tapes. rent.
Yeah.
Okay. And then television, religion on television. We want to spend some time there. I want to be very frank with you and say that I don't think that religion has the potential on television as it has on radio. Television has gone out of its infancy and out of its novelty. If you read yesterday's paper, John Crosby had in his review of the year, since the winter programs now are over and the summer replacements have come on, this year of scandal and so on, he doesn't have too much to say about the future of television, that Westerns are still going to be predominant next year, and that only the type of program for the cultured person will be on the educational stations or on very poor times as far as advertisers are concerned. Now, what place does the church have in using television? And we're going to review some of our own programs. I have a paper that I presented to the Lutheran Television Productions Committee just last month in May, which met here in St. Louis, and the real privilege to be asked to participate in that, Pastor or a Mr. Hocker, Hockman, William Hockman of Rochester, New York, who is audiovisual man for one of the churches, church denominations, and he's located there, is perhaps an outstanding authority on religious audiovisual aid. He was one of the speakers, and Parker Wheatley from our St. Louis area in the commercial field, and he was formerly of the University of Illinois in educational radio, was one of the speakers, and I was privileged to be the third one. And we gave quite a critical evaluation of This Is the Life, and I think you'll be interested in hearing some of the comments that we've made and also hearing some of the changes that will be made in this new series coming up in September to meet the needs of the viewing public for today. So we don't want to minimize the importance of television. On Thursday, we want to spend some time at station KETC, which is our educational TV station here in St. Louis, Channel 9. That, by the way, will be their last day of operating for the summer. They close down on July 1st and will not start again until the middle of September. But KETC is one of the pioneers in educational television. The station in Pittsburgh, the station in Houston, Texas, and one in San Francisco were first, and then KETC came on. It's owned and operated by a commission of the city of St. Louis, and they have people from the various educational denominations, the religious denominations, as well as the city and county schools on its staff. We started out having what was just called a mayor's committee, who looked into the possibilities of it, and that was back in 1952. I was teaching at Lutheran High School at the time, and recall that I went down to KUHT in Houston, which had just been open about 2 weeks, to see their facilities, and came back and gave a good report of what we could do here in St. Louis. And within 6 months, we started out in women's dormitory, of all places, over at Washington University. Now we have our own building right near, oh, it's still on Washington University, right nearby here. Educational TV is not accepted by the majority of people. And so there you're not going to broadcast a church service, because you have to look at the type of audience that you want to meet with a church service. But if you want to have a discussion about something particularly pertaining to religion, that's a very good opportunity, and I wish our Lutherans would use it more. They can use it, as long as it's a good professional type of program. I've been privileged in the past few years to be chairman. Well, for 2 years now, I've not had the job, but prior to that, for 2 years, I was chairman of the local radio television commission of the Metropolitan Church Federation, of which our Missouri Synod is an ecumenical member. I'm glad the outfit up there in Iowa, Confessional Lutheran, didn't hear about it. I'm sure it would have been written up. But at any rate, why I produced programs for the Federation, religious programs, and we did some on KETC. One, the last one I did was a year ago, on depth communication, once a week. geared it particularly to Sunday school teachers in the area. And the Metropolitan Church Federation, with its large mailing, could write to every Sunday school teacher, or at least every Sunday school in the city, and here's a program especially for you. So there is a real potential there, and I think that we have, if you have particularly have an educational station in town, might want to make greater use of it. Then we want to listen to tapes as much as we can during the course of the week. You will have these tape recorders. We will have extra rooms here on the floor to use for privacy. Then one of the things that we want to spend some time with toward the end of the week would be public relations and the radio ministry. I think that there is an area where too often we say to ourselves, let the other fellow do it, simply because we do not have a knowledge of what to do about the radio ministry. I can recall students telling me that as they went out on vicarage, they had a chance to talk to a radio station manager, and they says, look, you're giving the Baptists some time, why don't you give us some time? Well, now that's no way to go to a station manager and ask for time. He's not even going to pay attention to you. But if you can walk in and talk his same language, use the type of format that they speak about and the type of language that they use in the jargon of the radio station, he's going to say, this preacher really knows something about radio. I'm going to listen to what he has to say. And if you go in with the idea, here's a radio program I'd like for you to listen to or audition, not here's one I want you to put on the air, and when you listen to this, you're going to see the quality, the professional quality of this program, and you're going to say, where can I get more like this? Let's have dinner sometime, and I'll tell you all about this. And you'll have a chance to listen to it ahead of time, get real excited about it, and that's the way the Extension Service Department at KFUO grows, because, hey, we would like to have more of these, because it's professional quality.
That really works. We did that in Baltimore each year around the Reformation season, of course, which is typically good for the Lutheran
church. Mm-hmm. Very good.
We gave them programming, some of which we got from here.
Mm-hmm.
We always got time.
I want to give you each one of these books. This one here has my name on it. Just forget it, so you can cross it out later on. I had those three extra. I was going to ask you to buy this one, which is the same thing, only this has a newer cover, put out by the National Council of Churches. And since I had those three left over, why, we can save $1 apiece, and I'll give them to you.
Thank you.
To take along. But they will have, you will have some real good things in here. Maybe over the noon hour, you'll want to spend a little time in paging through. Because if you look under the table of contents, you will see, hey, here is something I wanted to find out about. What about writing, for example? How much time is spent on writing for radio? Is it different than writing for the newspaper? Now, Mr. Graves Mill has a little periodical that comes out. Is it weekly or the monthly for the Lutherans in the Cleveland area, you see? Is that type of writing radio good and for radio? What must be done? What about producing a program? And there I'm thinking particularly of radio, because when once you get into television, the production gets to be quite professional, and unions usually play a big part in telling you what you can do and what you can't do. A little sidelight on that was, I'm chairman at the present time of the television commission of our local Lutheran Council of Churches, and was down at the KMOX TV studios a couple of weeks ago when we were taping two programs, videotaping two programs, and I picked up a chair or a long bench that we were going to use for a pew. And I was going to carry it from one part of the studio to the other. But wait a minute, put that down. Union man will move that over there. Well, you learn to operate with these people in the commercial radio, and you learn to respect the union people, too. They have a right for their particular job. It's unfortunate that it oftentimes is duplicated or you're wasting money, but I imagine we do that ourselves, too, from time to time.
The Lord said, be long suffering.
Right. How about a local radio TV committee? What do you have in Cleveland? What do you have in Richmond? What about in your own church? Do you have a radio TV committee in church, especially Pastor, where you broadcast every Sunday? What is their responsibility? You see, how can you guide them and steer them into becoming more active, not just broadcasting the service, but maybe doing other things too? So I think that the week for us is going to be intensely interesting. I know that it will be for me. This is a love of mine that has that I've been blessed to let it be very profitable for others, in as much as it was started out as a hobby. As a teacher in the grade school, I used to come out here to KFUO and play the organ during a religious broadcast, and then one summer, Dr. Hohenstein said to me, why don't you have a vacation Bible school? So we wrote a script off for vacation Bible school, and for 3 weeks, every morning at 9 o'clock for a half hour, we had a vacation Bible school on the air. And we had these children send in their lessons every day, and we had about 35 or 40 replies a day. And then we had a Bible quiz and kept working through that way with KFUO, and then continuing to study down at the university, and finally getting on the staff here at the seminary and being able now to specialize particularly in religious radio, religious broadcasting. It's been a real blessing for me, and I hope that I can transmit a little bit of that. There's a man right on time. Good to see you, Pastor.
We're going to play.
Pastor Walter Grotrian, head of our religious department here, religious broadcasting at KFUO. Mr. Gravesmill from Cleveland, Ohio.
Gravesmill, that's right. Okay. Happy to meet you. I make you all
well,
fun. How are you?
And Pastor, are you acquainted with him?
How are you? Very happy to meet you. Pastor Favorite.
Different to you. Excuse me, gentlemen, I'll see you more.
Yes
sir, we'll be
around.
Listen to this man, he knows what he's talking about.
We can see that already.